Even on a budget, quality is non-negotiable. That's why Quince is the place to score high-end essentials at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Get your hands on buttery soft cashmere sweaters from just $60, Italian leather jackets, and so much more. And the best part about Quince, they exclusively partner with factories committed to safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Elevate your style without the elevated price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. So start getting your best night's sleep in sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. And you can try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee, plus 15% off your first order with code BUTTERY. So head to bollandbranch.com today. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Happy Friday, foodies, and welcome to Food Network Obsessed. This is the podcast where we dish on all things Food Network with your favorite Food Network stars. I'm your host, Jamie Sire, and today we are chatting with someone from the Food Network family who you know and love dearly. For years, he has shared his exuberant, approachable cooking style and infectious laugh. I am so excited to have him on today because we talk about his Food Network shows, starting his culinary career in Cleveland, his love for the Browns, and his meat-centric style of cooking. He is an award-winning chef, restaurateur, cookbook author, Bobby Flay's BFF, and a returning mentor on Barbecue Brawl. Please welcome Michael Simon. Michael, welcome to the podcast. You and I first met on the set of Iron Chef Showdown, and I have to say, you were probably the most relaxed Iron Chef on the show. You always seem to be having a good time. Have you always been that way in the kitchen?
Yeah, you know what? I love what I do, and it makes it just really easy to have fun while I'm doing it. You know, sometimes I think people confuse like my happiness with lack of competitiveness, but my whole childhood and everything else, I was like heavily involved in sports. So I always found that kind of the more calm I could make myself, the better I am in that world.
All right. Well, let's go back to childhood. Let's go back to early days, because you've been in the game nearly 30 years. You attended the Culinary Institute back in 1990. How did you decide on that path for yourself?
Well, you know, I started culinary in, I graduated in early 90s. I started in 88. And for me, a lot of it was like another path that I needed to find. I was a pretty good high school athlete. I wrestled in high school and had like a really severe injury my junior year. I broke my arm at a plate, 14 screws, dislocated elbow, compound fractured the other bone. And I'd been wrestling since I've been 8 years old and was going to go to college, you know, a scholarship for wrestling. And then I tried to come back my senior year and re-broke my arm. So I had to start working to help pay for school. You know, I came from a middle-class family. My dad worked at Ford, and I started working in restaurants and just fell in love with it. I was never a great student. So I asked my dad if I could go to culinary school, and he said, absolutely not. You're getting an education. You know, culinary school was thought of differently back then. There was no Food Network. There was no, you know, you weren't going to be a celebrity chef. You know, you're being a tradesman, which is fine. I still think of myself that way. And so he made me go to college, and I went to Cleveland State for a semester and got a 0.2, not a 2 point, a 0.2.
That's impressive. I feel like that's kind of hard to do.
It wasn't easy. I worked very hard at it. And then my, you know, I have a Greek and Sicilian mother, so she kind of got involved, and everyone's afraid of her, even though she's 4'10 and 95 pounds soaking wet. So she, we'll just call it, convinced my father to let me go to culinary school. And that was that, off to the races.
Well, that's a great story. And you mentioned, you know, your background with, you know, Greek, Sicilian, also Eastern European. How have all of those influences really helped shape the chef that you are today?
It was huge. Well, you know, my mom was a tremendous influence on foods that I loved. You know, she did. My dad was a good cook too, but she did a lot of the cooking growing up. So we ate a lot of Greek and Italian food as a kid. And then my dad's father, my pap, who, you know, fortunately I had in my life till he was 102 years old, was an amazing cook. And that's where I learned all the Eastern European stuff, because Cleveland's a very Eastern Euro town. So, you know, that's where the influence of the pierogi and the kielbasa and the smoked meats and all those things came in. My father worked midnights when I was a kid. So I used to always spend, you know, essentially Friday, Saturday, the weekends with my grandparents. And my grandfather would bring me down to the West Side Market. We'd shop for, you know, the meats. And then we'd pick up my grandmother at Higbee's and we would go back home and he'd cook. And so that's kind of where my love of, like, you know, the sauerkraut and the smoked meats and the very kind of meat centric cooking that I do was very much driven by my pap.
Do you remember the first thing that you actually like learned to make yourself?
Yep. My mother's baklava. You know, she didn't really start me off easy. I'm like, it's still one of the hardest things. Like, here I am 52 years old. It's still one of the hardest things to make. I'm like, Mom, maybe, you know, maybe we should have started off with like butter and noodles or something. But
she threw you right in the fire.
Right under the bus.
What makes her her baklava so special?
You know, she butters between every layer, which is huge. And the other thing is, you know, it's obviously a nut and honey based dessert, but she does this trick where when she grinds up the pistachios and the walnuts, she also, there used to be this kids cookie called Schweibel, and she used to grind that up and put it in there. But now that she can't find it anymore, so she used graham crackers. Mm. And it's like a quarter graham cracker. So it makes the nut mixture hold together better, and it pulls a little bit of the sweetness out. And there's never been a human on earth that has tasted her baklava and not said it's the best they've ever had, ever. Like, whether they're Greek, like, even when you give it to another Greek, they're like, okay, angel wins.
I mean, it sounds delightful. And hopefully I can have a chance to try that someday. I'm just inviting myself over, by the way.
Or I could send you some. You know, okay. She always has a stash, which is good. I was just over her house yesterday and I stole some right out of the freezer. She always has them in the freezer in little Ziploc bags. So I go down, I steal some, I head out.
I love that. Emergency supply of baklava at all times. Well, you were born and raised in Cleveland, started your career there, largely credited with, you know, saving the restaurant scene in downtown Cleveland. And as many fans know, and as this former, you know, sportscaster knows, huge Cleveland sports fan as well. So who's going to be the next Cleveland team to bring home a title, you think?
Oh, it's going to be the Browns. Yeah. I mean, for sure. I mean, I'm Cleveland till I die. Like, I mean, I'm in New York a lot, you know, now, and I'm currently home in Cleveland, but, you know, a diehard Cleveland sports fan. The Browns are going to bring Baker. In Baker, I trust. He will.
You do. You're a big Baker guy. Okay.
Baker's going to bring us a title.
All right. Everybody, you know, mark it on the board. We'll play this clip back.
I'm guaranteeing it.
Oh, okay. Wow. All right. Even better. You opened your first restaurant there, Lola, in 1997. You know, knowing what you know now about opening restaurants, the entire industry, what advice would you give yourself back then?
Well, I would say my dad was right. I should have went to college. No, I'm teasing, obviously. But, you know, I don't know. The beauty about when we opened, my wife Liz and I opened our first restaurant in 97. And the beauty of it, I think, is we had nothing. So we had no fear, which I think is what made it such a great restaurant. I mean, I learned a lot along the way on how to do things better and smarter and this and that. But I think what made Lola so special was truly I was 26 or 27. We had run other people's restaurants. You know, Liz ran the front and was a somm, and I was a chef. But like the rest of it, we didn't know as much about as we thought. So I think our like lack of knowledge and passion and vigor and really fearlessness about making a mistake served us really well, because we just did what we wanted. We never said like, you know, like, let's put this dish on the menu. Oh, do you think people will like this? Or like when Liz was designing it, like, is this too eclectic for Cleveland? Or, you know, we didn't limit ourselves. We just did what we loved and did what we wanted to do, and people responded to it. So, you know, I think there's a lot to be learned by that. Like, sometimes you just got to go for it. And, you know, when we were, you know, for lack of other terms, young and dumb, going for it was very easy.
Yeah. I mean, what you didn't know couldn't hurt you at the time, I guess.
Exactly.
How did you guys meet? It was in the business, right?
Yeah, we met in 1990 at a restaurant in Cleveland called Players. It was a little high-end Italian restaurant, and she ran the front, and I was actually hired as a cook. So, you know, as I tell everybody, it was terrific training for marriage, because when I met Liz in 1990, she was technically my boss. And here I am, you know, 31 years later, and she's still my boss.
She's still the boss. Absolutely. Yeah. Spoken like a very smart, happily married husband.
Yes.
No, that's great. I want to talk more just about your restaurants and kind of your progression. First of all, what Lola, the name Lola, who is Lola in your life?
We named Lola after my aunt, who is, you know, she just loaded with charisma, very outgoing, life of the party, was my, you know, one of my favorite people growing up as a kid. So the combination of just her personality, and we loved the name so much, was like, it was a no-brainer for us. We wanted to name a female name. Initially, my nickname for Liz is Lulu. Originally, we were going to call it Lulu, but there was a very famous restaurant called Lulu in California at the time. And then so we called it Lola because we loved my Aunt Lola.
Was the restaurant the life of the party as well?
Yeah, it was. I mean, especially when we first, the original Lola was only 48 seats. And again, we were younger, so we would stay open till 2 o'clock every morning, and you know, all the restaurant trade would come there to eat. And so, yeah, it was a pretty bumping little place back then. And then as we started getting older, we're like, you know, maybe 11 o'clock is when we should close, you know, but those first 5 to 10 years were really fun.
Do you remember your first like well-known or famous customer?
I do. Lola was very interesting because when you would go into we played loud music and it was dark, and we would get this very interesting mix of like kind of young hip people and then older people that heard about it or wanted to try food. And, you know, when I say older, they're probably like my age now, but,
seems so old at that time. Right.
I know. So, but I remember like the second, we're very into Liz and I both are very into music. So we knew a lot of people in the music scene in Cleveland, and probably the second week we were open, at one table was Trent Reznor of Nine Inch Nails, and sitting right next to him was Dick Jacobs, who owned the Cleveland Indians, you know, who was like older in like a powder blue suit. And then Trent was Trent, you know, and I'm like, this is everything I want this restaurant to be. This is like, you know, we have the owner of the Indians. We have like one of Cleveland's biggest rock stars sitting right next to each other, having a conversation and both so happy. Like, this is everything that I want. And then like a week right after that, we were only open for dinner back then, and I was prepping in the morning, and I look and there's someone knocking at the door, and I'm walking towards the door, and I'm like, oh my God, it's Sammy Hagar. Like,
wow.
So I answer the door and he's like, hey man, I know you guys just opened. I didn't know you weren't open for lunch. Trent Reznor told me that this is the place I got to eat in Cleveland. He's like, hi, I'm Sammy Hagar. I'm like,
like,
now
I
was a Van Halen fanatic, still am. So I was like, I'm fully aware who you are, you know? And he goes, is Michael here? I'm like, I'm Michael. He goes, I'll come back for dinner. I'm like, sit down, I'll cook you lunch. So he comes in, I cook him lunch. We've been buddies ever since. Like,
wow.
we've been friends ever since then. But those were like the first three. Like, it was Trent and Dick Jacobs, the owner of the Indians, and then Sam.
That's a great story. Did like more athletes, I mean, being such a big sports fan, did more athletes kind of start to find their way to the restaurants as well?
Yeah, we got a lot of athletes. I mean, LeBron had always been a great supporter of ours through and through. Whoever was the quarterback of the Browns at the time was always very supportive. Yeah, we've gotten most of the athletes come through, and a lot of, you know, like Mike Fratello, who used to coach the Cavs, like, and still lives in Cleveland to this day. Like, he used to always, he'd bring in all the coaches, and, you know, like when the Indians would play the Yankees, the managers at the time, the Indians were big fans of ours and the owners of the Indians. So like, you know, Billy Crystal used to come in, and like whenever there was like all that big playoff series kind of atmosphere, and the stars from different parts of the country would come in. We would always get them, which was great.
You have opened such a large variety of restaurants in your career. What do you love about opening restaurants and just, you know, that lifestyle?
It's a tremendous rush. I mean, opening the restaurant's a tremendous rush. We get to do it together. My favorite thing is like training the staff and watching when they have kind of that aha moment, like, Oh my God, I got it. I understand now, you know, regardless of the concept, whether it's very high end fine dining or barbecue or burgers, it's like, once they understand what you're trying to accomplish, you know, it makes it much, much easier. And then the other thing is we've had to close restaurants in the past year because of the pandemic and everything else, but you know, we've had staff that's worked with us forever and ever and ever. And you know, that like my culinary director, Katie Pickens, has been with me since she's been, I think, 19 years old for 17 years. She's 36 now, you know, and she runs the culinary part of our business.
How has the Cleveland food scene changed since then?
It's exploded. I mean, in 97, there just weren't as many options. You know, there were good restaurants and good chefs and people working really hard, but now there's a lot more depth, and it's been really fun to watch the growth and to watch people that have worked with us and for us go on to do their own things and open their own restaurants and have success. You know, it's like, you know, I always say you're as good of a teacher and as strong as your family tree is. And I'm very proud of our tree.
Yeah. I mean, you and Liz are your partners in all senses of the word, you know, life and business. But what are some of the challenges of being in business with your significant other?
It's actually easy. That's the easy, like people always say, oh my God, like, guys do restaurants together. Now you do some TV stuff together. Like, why? It's like, I'm like, that's easy. Like we get to when we would get to the restaurant, I'd go in the kitchen, she'd go in the front. Like it was
there's a line.
You know, yeah. And, you know, even when we do like Simon's dinners together, it's like, she's going to basically do pastries and cocktails and I'm going to do savory. And I mean, we obviously talk about everything and interact about everything, but you know, now in being together over 30 years, we understand our roles at home too, but it was like in the early years, they weren't as easy to figure out as the restaurant was.
You guys have seemed to figure it out pretty well. And speaking of Simon's dinners, I mean, you guys have self-shot and produced dozens of these Facebook Live videos, which is, you know, evolved into an actual TV show as well. Give us the backstory of how that all came to be.
You know, I got to say, it's probably the most fun I've ever had doing television. And that's in respect to every other thing I've ever done. So the day I was driving to Manhattan from Long Island to shoot at Food Network, and I got through the bridge through the tunnel, and I get a text, Food Network closed, the city's shutting down, we're closing. I'm like, oh my God. So I like go have an espresso at my apartment, get back in the car, and I'm driving back with Olivia, Liv, who does Simon's dinners with us. And before I get in the car, I send a note to David Zasloff and I said, look, I don't know what is going to happen with this. I'm going back to my house in Long Island. I have my social media director with me who shoots all my stuff for social. You know, we could create content if you guys want and need content because everything is shut down. By the time we got back to Long Island, you know, he had put me on a chain email, like, you know, a group email. And literally, I think 3 days after that, we started shooting Simon's dinners for Facebook Live. We did, I want to say, 45 or 50 of them straight days, you know, literally the first basically 50 days of the shutdown. And it got like 35 or 35 million views or 40 million views, like an insane amount of traffic.
Wow.
And then they turned it into a show for, you know, in the kitchen block on the weekend. So we still shoot it at home. Liv still shoots the majority of the phone show on her iPhone. You know, we set up like two GoPros and, you know, a wide shot with the camera, but there's no camera man or camera woman. There's Liv with their iPhone. She gets the majority of the shots, and we get a wide and set up the two GoPros and we basically shoot live to tape. I mean, there's a little editing, but it's as close to that Facebook Live kind of situation, I think, as you can get for a cooking show. I mean, fortunately, like I've been cooking most of my life. So like, I don't need that whole, like, I just cook. I don't really need the swap out situation. Like, I'm just like, let's go. All right, let's go. You know, and when it's a longer cook, we just kind of pause and then we get back into it. So it's fun to do because I feel like I'm just really, you know, we're cooking and we're teaching people, you know, yeah. And, you know, Olivia is only 28. So the questions that she asks during the show, I feel are the questions that a lot of home cooks have. You know, Liz and I don't have those questions. We've been working in restaurants our whole lives. So like a lot of things that seem like, oh, everybody knows this. And then Liv asks questions. I'm like, how don't you know that? She's like, nobody knows that. No one knows what you're talking about. So, you know, I think that that's what makes it, like, the combination of those things is what makes it very relatable to people.
Yeah, I think it resonated with a lot of people, you know, especially during that first, you know, 2 months or whatever it was.
It was like that half hour to an hour a day, depending on what we did, where people are just like, okay, I'm going to forget about all this stuff and I'm just going to have fun. And we were literally going, you know, I'm sure you remember, it's like that was the time when you go to the grocery store and you're like, nothing is there. So it was like we were shopping like everybody else was shopping. It was like, okay, today we have 2 cans of beans, you know, some ham, and I'm going to make dinner, you know. And I just think that that just connected with people.
Up next, we get into the real meat of the conversation. That's right. We're talking all about barbecue when we come back.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Yeah. And now, like you said, it's evolved into Simon's Dinners. We see you utilizing the grill for a lot of things that are, you know, traditionally made on the stove or oven, you know, pot of rice, chicken pot pie, meatballs, bagels. What would you say to people to maybe inspire them to experiment a little bit more with the grill, especially during these summer months?
Well, you know, I just love being outside and I think the cleanup is easier outside.
Yep.
And I've learned this from my grandfather and my father. It's like what I always try to teach people is anything you could do inside, you could do outside. Anything you could do outside, you could do inside for the most part. And as soon as you put the lid down on your grill, it's an oven. Like, it's an oven. Mm-hmm. So if you could, like, I cook like charcoal, but if you have a gas grill, once you figure out how to control the heat when you put the lid down, you just watch the temp gauge. You know, if you want to bake something at 350, wait till it gets to 350 and adjust it to that rate. There's nothing that anyone could make inside on a stovetop or an oven that I can't make on the grill. And that's what I try to show people.
Yeah.
So just have fun with it.
You do have a lot of the, you know, the toys, the bells and whistles in the backyard setup. You've got the smoker, the green egg, the charcoal grill.
I do, but you know, but 90% of what I do on Simon's Dinners is with a Weber Potbelly grill.
All right.
So you know,
is that what you would recommend to maybe like a first time grill?
100%.
Yeah.
100%. It's still, you know, like, look, I got a big 8-foot mill scale smoker and I love it. And I, you know, like it's the Liz can't stand it. You know, like she looks at this big piece of steel in our backyard. She's like, are you kidding me? You know, but still most of my data, like that's what I use if I'm making a brisket or whatever. But most of my day to day cooking, I do on the same grill that I grew up with. It's a little black 23-inch mine is Potbelly Weber. You know, you could go to any hardware store and pick one up for under $100. And that's where I do most of my cooking. I think it's the most inexpensive, versatile tool you could get for outside.
Just goes back to basics, right?
Yep. Yeah, I'm a less is more kind of cook.
Well, you describe your personal cooking style as meat centric, which, you know, for a girl over here who grew up on a cattle farm in Montana speaks to me on a number of levels. But can you elaborate on how your culinary point of view kind of evolved into that? Or maybe it was always that.
You know, it was always, I mean, you know, you grow up in Cleveland, Ohio, fish isn't like a thing. You know, I mean, there's walleye and perch and those seasons, but it's not, you know, I didn't grow up with even though I had a Greek mother who loved cooking fish, I didn't grow up with a ton of seafood in my life. You know, so we grew up eating a lot of meat you know, we would do the whole lamb on spits and all that kind of stuff as a kid. And I was just always so intrigued by it. And I was always intrigued by live fire and meat as a kid. And then when, you know, once I went to culinary school and started working in restaurants, I just like, you want to focus on what you enjoy doing the most. And those were the things I enjoyed doing the most, and I also thought that they tasted the best, you know? So now I do cook with a ton of vegetables too, you know, because I mean, Liz was a vegetarian for 25 years. So, you know, my vegetable game had to be strong. So, but like, you know, like, so for me, you know, I'm very vegetable centric and then meat centric. I don't cook, like, if I have a starch, it's more like I make myself a pasta and I have a pasta. But like, if I'm doing an entree, like I'm not one of those chefs, like you'll very rarely see like meat and a big potato or meat and rice. It's always like meat and veg. And probably a lot of that is evolved into that because of how I was raised. And then, you know, being with a vegetarian for over half my life.
Do you have a favorite protein to cook with and a favorite vegetable to cook?
I mean, favorite protein is pork because it's just so versatile. You know, I mean, it's in the words of Homer Simpson, like you're trying to tell me one animal gives us bacon, ham, pork chops and ribs, you know,
accurate.
So I do love the versatility of the hog. You know, I love root vegetables. So, you know, beets, carrots, turnips, celery root. I love cabbages, which is probably my Eastern Euro Cleveland upbringing. Kohlrabi, I love. You know, I love the vegetables that no one used to cheer for, but now have got more popular. Fortunately for me, eventually became trendy.
it was a true underdog story. And now, now they're shining. As you've mentioned, you have a strong affection for barbecue. You have the barbecue restaurant Mabel's. You're a mentor on Barbecue Brawl. Is there something specific that draws you to barbecue?
The patience of it. You know, that look, I love throwing a ribeye in the grill and eating it 20 minutes later, but there's something magic about taking a tougher cut of meat and putting it in a smoker. And then 15 hours later, it's done. You know, I love the process of cooking and the techniques of cooking. So those things always appeal to me. I like making ham and prosciutto and salami and, you know, slow cooking meats. And I, you know, and again, a lot of that is how we grew up. It's like when I was a kid, we couldn't afford steak. We didn't eat a steak. You know, we ate cuts of meat that were inexpensive that either had to be braised or smoked or slow roasted, or like, that's what we ate. And it's like, that's why, like when the offal started becoming popular, my grandfather used to, like, he would come into Lola and he'd be like, you're charging $18 for sweetbread. You should be ashamed of yourself. You could get them at the market for $1. And I'm like, Pap, not anymore. You can't, you know? So it was like, so that just always kind of sang to me. So I, you know, I just love the process. then again, the live fire thing, I guess I liked starting fires as a kid. It just worked out for me as an adult.
You made it into a career.
Right.
Well, let's talk Barbecue Brawl. This is obviously the competition show with Bobby Flay and Eddie Jackson. You guys each pick and mentor, you know, teams of master barbecuers in a variety of very tough grilling challenges. So as a master barbecuer yourself, how much fun is the show?
So much fun. I mean, people know now that Bobby and I are like, we've been best friends for a long time. You know, we don't see each other a ton because of work and all those other things. And, you know, we're always working, but like for 20 plus years, he's been one of my closest friends, you know? And when we get to do these shows together, we get to hang out for like 3 weeks, which is right off the rip is great. You know? And I think what the camera catches a lot of times is almost like us in our natural environment, just giving each other shit, you know, and all of a sudden now it's on TV. Like we forget that we're on TV. And then Eddie was the perfect addition to the whole thing. He's just a great guy and really fun and has no problems busting chops. Like, you know, Bobby and I did season one together and then Eddie came with us this year and it was just a riot. We had a blast doing it.
I mean, you can definitely tell that you guys had a good time. What is your strategy for picking your team on the show?
You know, I always try to look for, I do the same thing in my restaurant. Like obviously you want people that are skilled, but I also kind of look for a personality, you know, that like, I like where there doesn't feel like there's a lot of arrogance there, you know, that they are going to be good teammates to the people that are around them. So it's like, when it gets onto the nitty gritty, yes, it's a competition, but I always feel it's beneficial that if you have a group of people that are comfortable working together and helping each other get through. So, you know, that was my kind of goal, you know, when I was putting the team together. And then like one of the, like Brittany Baker, you know, I've known her father and I knew her, you know, for 25 plus years. So it was like, I knew right off the rip, like, with Britt, like there's someone who's a team player always and is going to work hard and it's always fun to be around. She understands team very well.
Mm-hmm. And coaching.
And coaching, yeah.
I mean, obviously you are there to mentor and coach, you know, these competitors, but did you learn anything from them along the way?
Oh, always. I mean, they all were super talented, all had like different skill sets, but did some really, like a really cool fried chicken one day that was great. And you know, all of them just did things a little bit differently. So I would just kind of let them do their thing and then say, like, maybe we could add this or what do you think about this? And, you know, I took it truly as a mentor. I didn't want to do the work for them, so to speak. I wanted them to kind of think it out for themselves and then say, like, what do you think if maybe we added a touch of this or a touch of that or did this or did that? And, you know, most of the time it worked. Some of the time it didn't. Sometimes I gave bad advice like anybody else, but for the most part, I think we worked really well as a group.
Last year, your team fell to Team Bobby, and you mentioned it. You guys have been best friends for 20 years. How much did that sting?
Oh, it stung. I mean, I guess fortunately and unfortunately, it's like off camera, I think I beat him in most things. Like in golf, he's put additions on my house, you know, but it's an exaggeration, but like for Iron Chef, all the years of Iron Chef, they always wanted us to go against each other. We said, we're not doing it. You know, we'll be partners. We'll go against other chefs. We're not going to cook against each other. And so this, like last year was like the first time we really went against each other on TV and he won. And I'm like, this sucks. I mean, we laughed about it. We had a good time with it, but I'm like, oh my God, the first time I go against you on like in a televised event, you win. I'm like, where's the camera when like we're golfing and you're paying me at the end? That's when we need the camera.
Why do you think you guys get along so well?
You know, to be honest with you, him and Liz have a very similar personality. They're both like Bobby's pretty quiet in real life. And I think a little bit on the shy side. And my wife's the same way. Liz is very quiet and shy, you know, until you get to know him, obviously. So, you know, obviously I am not quiet nor shy. as both Liz and Bobby like tell me, they're like, dude, you know, when you're in an elevator, you don't need to make friends with the person in the elevator with you. And I'm like,
or the Uber driver or.
Yeah. I mean, I got 20 minutes. Well, why not converse? So, you know, I think that the reason that we get along so well is like a little yin and yang kind of situation. you know, so we play off each other very well in that manner.
This has been so much fun. We are going to wrap up with a quick rapid fire round and then one final question here on Food Network Obsessed. All right. Favorite barbecue style?
Gosh, it's such a hard one. I mean, I like the Cleveland style that we do, but if I had to pick one, I would say Eastern Carolina.
What's Cleveland style?
Well, we kind of developed our own style. It's a very mustard vinegar based style. Okay. And we use a lot of the Eastern European spices.
All right. Coffee order.
Coffee order would be either a double espresso or a macchiato.
Okay. Late night snack of choice.
Oh, this is the easiest one ever. Salt and vinegar potato chips with French onion dip.
Oh, okay. I like the combo there. Charcoal or gas grill? I feel like I know the answer, but
yeah. What's a gas grill?
All right. So charcoal. All-time favorite Cleveland athlete.
Oh, wow. That's tough. Gosh. You know what? He's a dear friend. And I think it, because a lot of it is my, it really was my childhood. I'm going to say Bernie Kosar.
Okay. I think I know the answer to this one as well, based on one of your other answers, but pork or beef?
Pork, but pork. It's close.
It's close. Okay. Worst thing you've ever cooked?
Cow testicles.
Okay. What went wrong?
I'm always one of those people. I want to try everything. So one of my sushi times said, like, we're just going to keep trying everything. And like, we got to you hear Rocky Mountain oysters, all that stuff. Like, we braised them, sauteed them. And then like, I said, like, you know, they're not good. If they're not good fried, they won't be good. Cause anything fried just tastes better. So we fried them awful. And I eat everything. I eat brains, liver, heart. I eat everything. But man, those things are not good.
I had to judge a local like cooking competition once, and that was the secret ingredient. And was not a fan either.
Nope.
All right. Final rapid fire question. Favorite Food Network show that you are not on?
Ooh, that's a good one. Good Eats.
Ah, good choice. All right. Our final question on Food Network Obsessed. This is the one we ask everybody before we let you go. So what would be on the menu for your perfect food day? So breakfast, lunch, dinner, and dessert. There's no rules. You can travel, time travel, spend however much money you want. Anybody can cook it for you. It's your day. So go.
Okay. Go. All right. I would actually have Bobby makes great scrambled eggs. So I would have him make me one of any variety of his scrambled eggs in the morning. I would prefer if they got a little fancy, like maybe a little caviar on there. Mm. He does that occasionally with some brioche toast. So Flay gets to work. I want eggs for breakfast.
Okay.
Lunch. What would my favorite lunch would be? I would go to Barbuto, the original Barbuto, and go see Jonathan Waxman and have him make me his roasted chicken with salsa verde, some smashed potatoes, and a shaved Brussels sprout salad.
Okay.
And then for dinner, if I was in Cleveland for dinner, I just had it the other night. I would go to my mom's and ask for lasagna because nothing beats it. She never makes it the same, really. Like I've written some recipes that are my mom's lasagna. They're like one of her versions, but she kind of just wings it, but it's always perfect. Had it the other night. Fantastic. If I wasn't in Cleveland, I would get in a car or something and I'd get to Philly and I would have Mark Vetri make me pasta. Oh. Lots of pasta. It could be lasagna, could be whatever he wants. I really don't care. No one makes pasta as good as Mark, period. End of conversation. Don't even want to discuss it with anyone.
What about dessert?
Oh, dessert. So I'm a little bit weird with dessert. I don't like a million different things. I like my desserts relatively straightforward and simple. But my pastry chef for a million years, Summer, used to make a dark chocolate pudding with toffee popcorn on it and sea salt. And it just made me so, so happy. If I couldn't have that, I'd go back in time and I'd have my Yaya's rice pudding. But it would either be rice pudding or that dark chocolate pudding with that salty caramel toffee popcorn.
What about the baklava? Or is that just a snack?
The baklava, it's a snack. That's not dessert. That's a snack.
That's an in-between meal snack. Well, it sounds like a perfect food day with a lot of people that you really respect in your life. So I love that. And I love chatting with you and catching up. And thank you so much for taking the time.
Thank you. Have a great day.
You too.
Ciao.
I do have to say, I love the Michael Bobby bromance. It is a fun thing to listen to. They clearly have a lot of respect and admiration for each other. Perhaps maybe there's a Bobby and Michael go to Italy on the horizon, or maybe Greece or Eastern Europe. You can catch Michael heating things up on the latest season of Barbecue Brawl, as well as on his cooking show, Simon's Dinners Cooking Out, both now streaming on Discovery Plus. As always, thanks so much for listening, and make sure you follow us wherever you listen to your podcasts so you don't miss a thing. And of course, if you enjoyed today's episode, please rate and review. We do love it when you do that. That's all for now. We'll catch you foodies next Friday.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.